Welcome to Spark Your Fire Podcast. Content discussed on this podcast is general in nature. Please seek specific advice from qualified professionals. Now, let's start with the quote of the week.
By far the best investment you can make is in yourself. If you invest in yourself, nobody can take it away from you. You know, the most important thing is really who you associate with. You want to associate with people that are better than you are. I mean, basically, you'll go in the direction of the people that you associate with.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the show once again. It's a commodities update, or mainly gold, silver. We're going to try and cover rare earth metals as well to some extent. John, how are you, my friend?
I'm very well. Good to be here. And always excited to talk about commodities.
There's a lot of activity that's happening in this space. We saw another billionaire, the American billionaire hedge fund manager, Leon Cooperman.
Yeah, he gave an interview on the 29th, I think the 29th of September, so just about half a week ago. Mm-hmm. And so to give you some context, Leon Cooperman is a billionaire New York hedge fund manager. He's about 77 years old, and he runs the Omega Fund, which manages about $3.5 billion, but most of that's his, so he's basically managing his own money. But Leon Cooperman bought gold for the first time last week. And in an interview he gave, he explained why he did it. And if you're happy for me to quote, he said, all right, this is Leon Cooperman. He said, I bought gold for the first time in my life a week ago. I understand the case for gold. We're on the way to some banana republic situation. Nobody's worrying about the debt that's being created. I'm focused on who pays for the party when the party's over. As I mentioned before, it took 244 years to go from zero national debt to $21 trillion, and that's going up at $4 trillion, maybe $5 trillion this year. What about next year? And then he says, we're getting away with it because interest rates are near zero. Government is financing themselves very low, but that's not a permanent situation. If interest rates are going to be zero permanently, basically, it says a lot about future economic growth and future returns in the equity market, end quote. So you've got like the old money getting into gold.
So, John, just correct me if I'm wrong, but is it fair to say, so we saw Buffett, we've talked enough about it over the podcast in the last couple of weeks, Berkshire buying gold, and now Leon Cooperman news came out. In a traditional style portfolio, it's normally 60% equities, 40% bonds, right? Is it fair to say all these billionaire, even small hedge fund managers are essentially dumping is probably not the right word, but are trying to move away or reduce their exposure to the bond market and gear themselves up into the gold markets, basically, or the commodities space in general?
Yes, there's a lot of that happening. We know Buffett rotated out of bank stocks, so he sold his you know, the big banks and moved that money into Barrick gold. Gold is typically an alternative to treasuries because, you know, there's no yield and so on, and it's a tier one asset at the central bank level. But what's interesting about gold ownership in general is gold and gold-related assets represent about 0.3% of all the assets that are held at the moment. So 0.3%, which is tiny. And if you think about the average amount of gold and gold-related assets held over the last 30 years, the average is about 2 to 2.5%. So to get back up to the 30-year average, gold would need to go up about 4 to 5 times to equal its median over the last 30 years. And that's what a lot of gold bugs are speculating, that it's just under-owned. We talk about hedge fund managers. I mean, you've got a hedge fund manager who's 77 getting into gold for the first time. And all that really tells you is how under-owned gold is as an investment asset.
Mm-hmm. And obviously, to his words, if the debasement was to continue at the pace that it's continuing, there's another $2.5 trillion bill the U.S. is looking at. So,
yeah, I mean, no one knows what it looks like when the reserve currency goes bad. I mean, we know what happens when the Reichsmark goes bad in the, you know, early 1920s, and we know what happens when the Argentinian peso goes bad in Zimbabwe. But we don't really know what it looks like when a reserve currency goes bad. And it may never happen. It may be something that we can deal with. But just in case, all these hedge fund managers are taking a small bet on gold. And because it's so under-owned at 0.3%, it's not going to take a lot for gold demand to multiply just to get back to historical levels. Because as you know, in this podcast, we don't claim to know anything, these are just some of the facts.
It's acting now as an insurance policy, essentially, just like your house insurance to some extent, if in case the fiat money system burns down, basically. Yep.
And if it doesn't, you've still got gold.
It's exactly. If it doesn't, they're still going to hopefully keep printing the money that they're where they are. And that leads us back to the same place, which is gold and some other commodities.
Mm.
Also, there has been some action in the price. So gold, we saw a couple of weeks ago, touched its all-time high, which was 2070. All-time high was 1920, and it went past that. And since then, it has corrected roughly about 10%-ish. What is your take on that? What are your thoughts, Mitt?
So in the month of September, it was down about 4 to 5%. But over the last 6 months, gold is up 21%. So, you know, if we look at, it's going to be a wild ride. Gold, silver in particular, is going to be a wild ride, and it's going to go up and down. My view is that it hasn't, the bull market's still intact, but this is a bull market that's going to last for some years. There's no fast money in this, but it is going to grow, I think, over a couple of years. But I think all tangible assets will. I think land will as well. So it's part of a broad theme. If you look at the charts, it did break below the 50-day moving average, and that usually means something. It either means that it's going lower or it's a buy signal. So it's above the 200-day moving average. So most of the chart guys are saying that the chart isn't broken, that it's still intact, that no kind of intense chart damage has happened. I think the gold story is intact. You know, it's up 21% over the last 6 months. Not many assets can say that. I think it's going to zigzag its way higher until right at the end it starts to go higher very quickly. But we're not there. We chatted a couple of months ago that the gold was going vertical in July. It had to come back.
Yeah.
It was very unhealthy, and if it didn't come back, it was going to end in tears. Mm-hmm. So a small 10% correction is worse than is better than an 80% correction. And if it kept going up the way it was in July and August, we would have been left with a bit of blood on the street. This way, it sets itself up nicely for a resumption of the gold bull market. Mm-hmm. I also think that we have this perfect cup and handle formation, which is a very bullish signal, but it needed to do the handle part. So it needed to do a dip and then a recovery to make that very well-known chart formation happen. So the dip was necessary, and I think it kind of goes up from here, but I could be wrong.
Also, the interesting thing was the gold to silver ratio. If I'm not wrong, it's currently sitting towards 80-ish, which it more looks like the silver is a better buy than gold. Now, I'm not an expert like you are in this space, but from what I've learned, it seems like silver is a better buy at this point.
Yeah. I was chuckling at you saying I'm an expert. So thank you for that. I wouldn't say that. So when the gold silver ratio goes over 80 times, and it's about 82 at the moment, silver's considered cheap and gold's considered relatively expensive. If you were a regular purchaser of precious metals, you had a big portfolio, according to the ratios, you would say, okay, I'm only going to buy silver now because it's cheap. But of course, if you don't own anything, you would probably start with gold because it's a lot more a lot more stable, a lot less volatile. But yeah, so silver's relatively cheap now.
Mm-hmm. Fair enough. And that's testing a major support level as well at the same time. I think, if I'm not wrong, it's testing the 100-day moving average on a daily chart.
And what does that mean? Does that mean if it goes, it's more likely to go lower?
My thoughts on that, John, again, for the listeners, we are not chartists, we are not traders, right? We learning and sharing at the same time. But my opinion is there's a possibility that it can go another 10 to 15% lower. But looking at the scene overall, the macro scene overall, which we have discussed on our podcast a few times, it won't surprise that it doesn't see a correction and it just holds around the price point and then slowly start to move back up. The more it tests the 100-day moving average, which just looking at the chart, it's tested it about 3 or 4 times now almost. So the more the chances of it breaking that and testing the next level, which will be 200-day moving average. And that's where probably the bounce will come back from, in my opinion. But again, we are not chartists, we are not traders. What are your thoughts, John, on the mining stocks in this space? Now, if you have got any general thoughts on the mining stocks.
So there's a lot of variation in the mining, gold mining stock space. So generally speaking, bullion bars that just sit in, you know, a vault somewhere are the safest, least volatile, least exciting aspect of precious metals. You know, it'll never make you rich, but it will protect your wealth, that sort of thing. So that's the least risky. And if you can imagine it like a pyramid, if you want to get leverage into the precious metal space, if you're like completely convinced that it's going to be this, you know, runaway market, and you really want to get exposure to that, well, then that's when equities are the way to go. But even within equities, there's all different degrees of risk and reward. So right under bullion, the next most boring type of share investment is the big major caps like Newcrest in Australia. It would be Barrick in America. They pay dividends. They're a very liquid stock. They're very well known. They're part of pension funds and everyone kind of owns a bit of it directly or indirectly. Then you've got the next most risky type, which would be a royalty company, which would be a listed company that doesn't actually take any risk mining the gold, but they own deposits and then another miner will go in and pay them a royalty for the benefit of mining it, and they just take a percentage of what they take out of the ground. So royalty companies are probably the best way to play gold if you want to do the stocks. Royalty companies are probably the best business model on the planet, actually. Mm-hmm. Royalty companies are the most profitable type of business because it doesn't take many people to run them, but they're extremely profitable. And I can say I don't own any. So this is not advice. But but royalty companies are the best type of company out there. Just the business model is fantastic. But then, you start to get into really risky areas where you've got prospectors and junior miners and so on. So, you've got some companies out there that own land and they're exploring. They might find anything and they might not. It might be worth $1 million. It might be worth zero. So when we talk about gold mining stocks, there's a whole range of risks from the big caps that are going to move slowly in one direction to explorers that are going to be all or nothing, very asymmetric trades. And you've got to do a lot of research if you want to buy stocks. But to answer your question, what do I think of them? I think if you believe in precious metals, then stocks are a leveraged way to play that. So, I mean, I guess by default, I believe in the stocks. The problem is, how do you pick them? That's the challenge, right? Which one do you buy? Because a lot of them are going to, not 8 out of 10 are not going to be worth anything at the end of the bull market. Mm-hmm. So you just got to be really careful which one you buy.
Yeah, that's for the listeners. If you know any good ones, let us know.
Yes. I'll just give you the numbers for silver. So silver was down. So this silver is interesting. So silver is like just gold on steroids or gold on cocaine. So silver was down 13% in the month of September, but it's up 71% over the last 6 months. So if you want a roller coaster ride, buy silver. Gold is, as you can see, far more stable in terms of its performance. But, you know, silver is, you know, we talk about gold stocks being gold with leverage. Silver is like gold with leverage as well. It's a very, very volatile version. Mm-hmm. But there's a lot more upside probably.
And just on that, John, there's a chart that I shared with you a couple of days ago. I don't know whether you remember or not, but it was precious metals 5-year returns. Platinum was negative 1%. Gold was 73% in 5 years. Silver was 79%. Palladium was 294%. And rhodium was almost 1,700%. So yeah, silver definitely did better than gold, as per this chart.
Yeah, I mean, so just really quickly, we don't talk about those other metals very much, but platinum and palladium are alternatives to each other. They're essentially, they go into catalytic converters of cars, and the automotive industry and I guess some jewellery and platinum are the only consumers of that metal. What happens is platinum becomes very expensive, and then the industry decides together that they're going to switch into palladium. And so palladium had this massive run. Rhodium is really, really illiquid. Rhodium was, you know, trading at nothing, and then it just goes vertical. And the thing with rhodium is it'll go down to zero just as quickly, and then it'll make another run in 10 years' time. I don't touch those things. I just don't know enough about them.
Sure. And is it fair to say the reason silver sees such a roller coaster ride compared to gold, which is a bit more stable, is the market cap basically? Silver's market cap is obviously much lower than gold. Gold sits somewhere around 7-8 trillion. Silver is, I think, roughly around 800 billion-ish, just under a 12. So being less deeper liquid market, it sees much more volatile move.
Yeah, I mean, that's the main reason. I'd say that there's another reason, or there's another 1.5 reasons. So it's a very small market. So when someone like Berkshire Hathaway or JP Morgan comes into the market, it moves it very quickly. That's the first thing, small. Second thing is that silver's different because it has an industrial component. So if there's a massive, like a pandemic, and industrial production stops, well, silver responds to that very acutely, whereas gold doesn't really have any industrial uses. But there's kind of a third reason why it's more volatile, and I don't necessarily know enough about this to comment, but a lot of people say that there's a lot more manipulation in the silver market because it's held by fewer people, and the biggest holder of silver on the planet is JP Morgan. And some people say that there's short selling and all sorts of stuff that happens. I'm not sure about that, but I know that Bear Stearns was involved in that sort of thing, and the silver market's one of the reasons why it went broke in the last GFC. So there might be some manipulation in the silver market that leads to a bit more volatility as well.
I have no doubt that the manipulation happens in the gold market too. It's just it's not that visible, that's all. Also, John, do you want to touch on oil a little bit?
Oil's interesting. So oil for 6 months was stuck in this band between $40 a barrel and $45 a barrel, which is sort of zigzag in between. And then in September, in particular the last week or two, it just smashed to the downside. I mean, we woke up this morning to oil dropping 5%. So oil's around $36, and it did that very, very quickly. I think when we chatted a month ago, Jazz, we were pretty convinced that oil was around $45, I think, a month ago, and we were saying, "Oh, look, it's a bit overvalued." I mean, the oil market was assuming there would be this V-shaped recovery, and that all these oil reserves would be soaked up, and I don't think it's happening. I think September was interesting for a couple of reasons. Generally, one was it was when the kind of the party kind of ended a little bit, you know, there's, I think, a lot more questioning of whether there is a V-shaped recovery going on. And last night there were some employment numbers that came out of the US that weren't great. They were okay, but they were not as good as people thought. And I think we're seeing that in copper, we're seeing that in oil, we saw it in gold, that all these prices came back down a bit because I think people are just starting to pull their horns a little bit. Oil is a big indicator of general economic progress, and you know, September saw a little bit more sober reflection on the economic recovery, and the oil price came down.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. So do you see that to be the bottom of the market now, or are we going to see oil in negative once again on paper?
I'm not sure. I know more about gold and silver than oil, but let me put it this way. I think oil probably has further to go south, But my big thinking on oil is that oil probably gets back down to $20 and then it goes to $200 over the next couple of years. The thing with oil is, with the focus on renewables, with the focus with the pandemic, a lot of production is shut down, and it takes a long time to shut production down. But when that happens, it's hard to switch it back on. And I think we've disrupted the production of the oil supply chain, that eventually that's going to catch up with us. In the same way that we overproduced oil through fracking and all that sort of stuff, and then a couple of the big shale producers went broke in the 2020. Fast forward a couple of years, we've disrupted the oil supply. We're going to be looking at shortages in a couple of years, and it's going to go up. It's, you know, over $100. I'm just not sure when that will be.
What's the peak oil has seen? Sorry, I know nothing about oil. So
yeah, it got to $150 briefly, and I want to say that was in about 2007.
Right, okay. When the airlines are back on, I'm assuming that's when we'll see the, or just before that probably, based on the news, we'll see oil start shooting up a bit, my guess is.
Yeah, the thing with low oil prices is like a tax cut for the economy, but particularly for the mining sector. So we talked about mining shares before. One of the reasons mining shares are likely to do well, although you have to pick which one, but is because when you think about a mining company, their biggest cost is oil. I mean, once they've got the capex and they've started the project, oil is the biggest cost. Now, if oil prices are low for at least the short to medium term, that means that any increase in the price of, let's say, gold or silver is pure profit. Mm-hmm. And that's why there's a lot of potential upside if these miners get it right, because the cost of energy is so low at the moment. If you look at the gold to oil ratio, oil is like the cheapest thing on the planet. It's really cheap. Historically, it's very, very cheap. So the question is, are we going to need oil in a couple of years, or are we going to, we're about to talk about rare earths, but are we moving away from oil permanently, in which case, yes, it's cheap, but it should be cheap and it's never going up again, or we're under-investing in it, we're making a huge mistake because we can't live without oil. I mean, they're two very different, very, very different options.
So that's interesting. That gives us the segue into the thing that we were going to discuss next, which is another hot topics in the market at the moment, which is the rare earth metals, right? But before we go a little bit deeper into the rare earth metals, just on that one point, yes, with all the electric vehicles and solar wind farms go green future, oil is not going to be displaced in a day or two.
I mean, my guess is, and this is like a coin flip, but my guess is that we realize that we've made a big mistake and we've underinvested in oil, and that there isn't really a plausible alternative to oil just yet. Mm. And we, you know, I don't know if it's 5 years or 10 years, but we realize that we have underinvested in oil infrastructure and we have massive shortages, and it's going to take years to bring it back online. And that's where kind of this medium to long-term view is, that oil goes up quite a lot. But
interesting. Rare earth metals, mate. You and I have been talking in private conversations whenever we get time away from our wives. But on a serious note, there has been a lot of news, media, in the finance world, obviously, floating around how the demand for the rare earth metals over the next 5 years is really going to ramp up. And from memory, there was an article that I saw yesterday, which I shared with you. Europe has basically formed a commission, which is called ERMA, to figure out where all this supply is going to come from to compete the demand. So what is your take on this?
Yeah. So, I mean, rare earths are the least transparent part of the commodity space. So it's kind of the newest part, and it's the part we know least about. Interestingly, rare earths aren't that rare. They're very prevalent in the Earth's crust, but they're just not in they're not in clusters the same way other materials are. So they're kind of spread throughout. So they're a little bit harder to mine, but they're not that rare. So the thing with rare earths is that China's got this market stitched up, and rare earths is interesting because it is so political. We've got, you know, this quasi trade wars on at the moment with the US and China and their spheres of influence, and China refines 80% of the Earth's rare earth materials, and the different countries are trying to de-risk themselves from China, who may or may not switch off their supply. So we can talk about that a little bit. Demand is far greater than supply of rare earths, so it's a good place to be. It's also very niche, very small, so finding the right players in the rare earth market is tough, and there really aren't a lot of publicly listed rare earth companies. There's a couple, and you can Google search it for the ASX, and there are a couple, but there aren't many publicly listed rare earth companies, so to get into the space is not that easy. So rare earths are hot, and they are controversial. On Wednesday night, or Thursday our time, Donald Trump signed an executive order declaring a national emergency in the mining industry, and he was trying to reduce the reliance of the USA on China's rare earth metals. So what he was doing is he was trying to use a Defense Production Act to speed up mine development and to speed up the exploration of rare earth metals in the US. So they signed this executive order, but they also signed agreements with Australia and Canada to secure their supply chain. So Australia is quite well placed. We're like the fourth biggest producer of rare earth metals. The problem with rare earths, as I said before, is that China's the main refiner of rare earths. So China's the biggest producer. Then it's the US, then it's Brazil, then Australia, I think something like that. Mm. The problem is if you're America, America digs it out of the ground, then exports it to China to refine it, and then imports it again. That's the problem. Mm-hmm. All the refined products come out of China. So Trump's worried about this. Now, the background to the reason why Trump and the US are worried about rare earths as a security issue is that obviously rare earths go into military equipment and all the hypersonic equipment and all that sort of stuff. But back in 2010, the Japanese Navy pulled over a Chinese fishing boat in Japanese waters. And as a retaliation for that, China stopped, literally prevented the export of rare earth metals to Japan. Like, won that order, they basically said, prevented the ship from leaving these Chinese ports and exporting the rare earth metals to Japan. That really piqued the interest of of all these different countries, in the US in particular, and the US doesn't want to be in a situation where the US military is dependent on Chinese exports if push comes to shove. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, really, really interesting.
I think in Australia, one of the big companies is Lynas, L-Y-N-A-S. Their ticker is L-Y-C. And when you look at the chart, you can tell from the share price that there's a demand in that space, clearly.
they were named in that kind of agreement with the US. Mm. There's questions over whether they can deliver on it. So you just the listeners, you want to be careful in this space. Mm. But Linus is probably the main.
A lot of stuff going on in the commodity space. We had David last week on our show. He touched on how Perth is just lighting up with all the demand in the real estate because of the resource sector starting to play up or heating up, essentially. So space to be watched, John. Real estate is really getting boring when you start looking at some of this stuff.
Yeah, that's quite interesting, though. We talked about this when the mics went off the other day. Like, real estate, anyone who's wealthy owns real estate. So you got to own it, but it's a get-rich-slow scheme. So if you want something a little bit more asymmetric, commodities provides some interesting options for you.
Mm-hmm. Surely.
You got to do a lot of research for commodities, though. So, I mean, it's very cyclical is the first thing, but it's also then once you pick the commodity that you're interested in investing in, then you've got to do all this research on which how to buy it. It's very good way to make money if you know what you're doing.
One way to look at this space is basically to watch what gold does, because gold is clearly going to lead the charts here. And as gold moves up, in my opinion, all the other commodities, whether there's demand or not, will just naturally follow. It's like when that tide comes, it lifts all boats, basically. So
yes, and when the tide goes out, you see who's been swimming naked.
Exactly. So
that's the other one. But yeah, rising tide lifts all boats. That's
rising,
right.
Yeah, rising tide lifts all boats. So gold is the one that's probably going to lift all the boats in this space.
But there's a theme. There's a theme, though. The theme is, I think for the theme for this decade, and I could be completely wrong, but here's my guess. The theme is get out of paper assets and get into physical assets, get into hard assets. So that could be real estate, it could be whiskey, it could be cigarettes, it could be gold, get into tangibles, because I think that there's going to be just a move away from intangibles into tangibles.
See, what you just mentioned is actually very scary, John, because when you start looking at the derivatives market, which is sitting in quadrillions, we are talking here, right? And I know why you're saying there's a bigger picture here of shifting away into the actual tangible stuff. That market can blow up. And if it does, like bond market, it's another one to be looked at carefully, essentially.
The real action is in, I think, the bond market. That's where everything is really happening. But prepare for volatility for the next, certainly in the short term, but probably all of next year as well.
Interesting. Anything else, mate, that we want to add? I think that's a pretty good update on some of the stuff that we have talked about.
That's a wrap. I mean, but when we chat this time next month, I'm sure commodities are going to have done something else that's pretty wild. It's a wild ride.
Well, that's why we're covering it up.
Actually, by this time we do this next month, the election will either be on or around, or maybe even
it will be around.
Yeah, so we'll be in the eye of the storm. So I look forward to that chat.
Awesome. To the listeners, none of this is financial advice. Do your own research. We just enjoy talking about this stuff and try and make sense of it. So hopefully it helps, but please do your own research. Cheers, Jasmine.